Welcome to another edition of the Basketball Teacher Podcast. Our mission is to bring you discussions on a wide array of topics in the coaching world to grow players on and off the court. You can connect with us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, and also reach us directly through email at basketballteacherpodcast@gmail.com. Now, here's your host, Coach Mike Hernandez.
Welcome back, everyone. Thank you guys so much for joining us here for this episode. As always, wherever in the world you're listening to us from, whatever platform you're listening to us on, I say it every episode. I'll continue to say it. Thank you guys so much for the support, the kind messages, emails, tweets, all of the things that you've sent the show's way. I really do truly appreciate it as we round the corner here on year four of this. And I'm really excited that this episode worked out kind of well with off-season, because I think a lot of us as coaches, as we kind of think about what we're looking to improve on and things that we're going to try to attack for next year, one of the big points of emphasis I hear sometimes in coaching circles is talking about, you know, getting stronger and getting more physically fit and being able to just be a little bit more tougher physically and have the weight and the strength and the stamina and kind of that endurance, especially as the season goes on, or in those tough, you know, defensive rebounds, offensive rebounds, going up strong to the basket, all that really good stuff. So that's what we're going to get into today, about building a physically strong team. So, like I said, I think this is really cool that this episode will kind of come out here right in peak off season time. So as listeners, you guys can kind of do a little reflecting on your own practices when it comes to the weight room and things that you do like that, and hopefully are able to take some tips and ideas from my guest here. My guest, a longtime coach, currently now the coach at Orange Beach, girls basketball coach. Very happy to be joined by Coach Mike Chase today. Coach, really appreciate you being able to come on here and talk to us. How are things going?
Things couldn't be better. Just started spring break down at the beach. Basketball and sunshine and some beach, you know, kind of the best of both worlds. I can't complain.
It sounds like you're living the dream right now. Sounds like that's perfection, pretty much. That's great. Coach, I know you've had a very, very long, lucrative there basketball and coaching career. So tell us about where this great game of basketball has taken you, and what was the winding road that got you to Orange Beach?
So I grew up in Northwest Ohio, and I was a football guy at heart. Let me put it this way. I was a better football player, being a 5'10" white guy, you know, who could run the ball and tackle people. You know, I loved basketball, played basketball all the way through high school, but went to play a little bit of college football before I got hurt. And then once I got hurt and I couldn't play anymore, I ventured to Bowling Green State University up in Northwest Ohio, and my high school basketball coach called me up while I was a sophomore there. And he was like, "Hey, my JV coach, went to take another job." He said, "You know, I know you're going into education, you know, do you think you could come back and coach some basketball with me?" And, so I went back. I was 20 years old and I started coaching JV boys basketball at my alma mater. And I coached with a guy named Bruce Smith, who is an all-time high school boys basketball coach in the state of Ohio. His son Ryan Smith played at Purdue with Robbie Heupel, and that group. Had a daughter who played at Indiana, so big basketball family. But he was a huge inspiration on me becoming a basketball coach. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, I just, you know, I learned the game, learned how to coach under him. And then, you know, at 26, I moved to Florida and I got a shot to be a varsity girls basketball coach at Palmetto High School. From there, I was there 2 years, moved to Birmingham, and been in Birmingham for 25 years, and won a couple state championships. My team won the big school state championship, the 7A state championship in 2018, and then we did it again in 2020. And from there, Orange Beach came calling and asked me if I would come down and get their program going in the right direction. And it was just a perfect opportunity for my wife and I to move down here, coach together, and try to build a championship program down here.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I think that, you know, as you and I talked about right before we started recording, that sometimes that change is sometimes the best thing for you when you need to recharge those batteries, right? To get that new perspective or get those new location, and all of a sudden that opens up all these things and really gets you going again. And it sounds like it's just been a great opportunity for you to be there now.
Yeah, no, it, you know, it, we had, you know, a group of girls that, you know, the coach that they had previously was not a teacher. He wasn't on campus. And I just remember when I came down and I took the job, and they were like, you know, oh my gosh, you're like a real basketball coach. And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, and you're a teacher too. You're going to be here during the day. And I was like, yeah, you mean we can come down and see you in the gym, you know, during, you know, lunch. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to be here all day. So it, just the enthusiasm that all my new girls, you know, have, and, you know, and all that stuff has just been tremendous, you know, for us to start building in the right, going in the right direction.
That's awesome. That's great, Coach. I want to ask you before we get going on the topic about the concept of building 3-point shooters and the concept of shooting in general. And I wanted to pick your brain here on what it is that you do to train 3-point shooters so that they're effective and they're game ready when it comes time for them to shoot.
Yeah. So I've been on this topic for a while. It's funny, you know, Stanford's men's basketball team almost beat Kansas the other day. My first stop when I came to Birmingham, I was the head coach at Mountain Brook High School, and Bucky McMillan was a junior at Mountain Brook at that time, a junior in high school. And so Bucky and I have been friends forever. And, you know, Bucky, you know, they like to shoot the three and press and all that stuff. Yeah. You know, he did it in high school, and that now he's doing it at Samford. And, you know, so even in the early 2000s, you know, I had my teams, we would shoot, you know, 30 to 35, sometimes 40 threes a game. And, you know, it was just very unusual, you know, back 20 years ago,
I'm sure,
to have a team that shot that way. So, you know, it's kind of a system that I don't really know where it developed. I think my first teams, the two teams that I had when I was in Florida, when I became a head coach, had really good 3-point shooters on it. So I kind of, you know, used some of the strengths that they had. And then, you know, I mean, it was just a great style, you know, girls can't dunk, you know, and so kind of the best thing that, you know, girls can do, you know, to really get the crowd ramped up and that kind of stuff is, you know, if they can knock down threes. And, you know, so from, I think those first teams that I had, you know, I really, you know, learned a lot of drills. I learned, you know, how to devise offenses in order to, you know, get 3-point looks, you know, and then I started watching a lot of coaches that shot threes and tried to figure out everything that I could to, you know, to make that an integral part of, you know, what we were doing.
It's, I imagine when you were getting those high volume shots, like you said, like 20 years ago, people must have been kind of looking at you crazy. The fact that you were shooting at that high volume, it's so normal now, but I'm just imagining some of the looks or some of the questions people must have been asking you when you were first starting to do it.
Well, you know, the thing that was great about it actually was, you know, I feel like I'm pretty good a teacher of other aspects of the game, but what happens is that coaches and fans of other teams, they get so dazzled, or I don't know what the correct word is. You know, they get so enamored with us shooting threes that they forget about all the other things that we do, you know, that we did really well. And one of the things I think that I've always prided myself on was the offensive rebounding aspect. I mean, you know, when you're shooting from, you know, the high school is 19 feet, 9 inches. So, you know, when you're shooting a 20 plus foot shot, you know, you're obviously not going to shoot at a highest percentages if you're shooting a 10-foot shot or a 5-foot shot, or you know, getting a layup or whatever. And so, you know, so what we did was we paired, you know, all of our offensive rebounding stuff with our 3-point shooting stuff. And, you know, we actually did something, you know, that when I talked to other coaches, they thought was almost unheard of, was, you know, with our 3-point shooting, we would send all 5 to the boards. And, you know, everyone's like, how are you sending all 5 to the boards? Aren't you getting worried about being runouts, you know, and those kind of things? Well, what I started doing way back in the day was we would send 5 at the beginning of the game. We would shoot our normal 3s. And I would have a coach that would chart, you know, our second chance points. So anytime we got an offensive rebound and we scored, you know, we kept those points. And then we also kept points for how many runouts we gave up, you know, how many uncontested layups. And we were okay with, you know, we were going to send 5. Yeah. And if we got offensive rebounds and we got to halftime and we were, you know, +8 or +9 on second chance points, and maybe we gave up 1 run out and we gave up a layup, well, we're +7. And for me, that's a win, you know? And so we would send 5 until, you know, we got to a point, and our number was always 4. So if we got to the point where we were sending 5 and we were -4 in the second chance points for them the run out layups for them versus the second chance points for us, well, then we would just send 4 and we would drop 1 back, you know, and mm-hmm. vice versa. But I think the thing that really got lost was how good of an offensive rebounding team, you know, that we were, because your traditional rebounds aren't, you know, everybody's learned to worry about boxing out the blocks and worry about boxing out, you know, within the, you know, like the SEC logo, you know, that little restricted area. Those were not the rebounds that teams typically had to box out against us. And, you know, I remember talking to coaches and they would say, you know, when we would prepare for you, we would completely change all of our offensive rebounding drills, because the traditional rebounding drills that were 12 feet and in were not things that you were ever getting, because if you were missing, you know, your rebound's going to bounce out 12 to 15 feet. And so that's a totally different rebound mm-hmm. than a traditional yeah. team was. So, you know, so that all those little things kind of go with being a 3-point shooter and being a 3-point shooting team. You know, you can't just say, hey, you know, we're going to shoot 3s and we're going to send 5 guys back and not give up a layup. You're not going to make enough shots. You know, you've got to win that second chance, that second chance battle.
Yeah, no, that'd be really interesting to chart, you know, sending 5 and to see what, you know, the differential would be there in terms sure. of, you know, transition and everything. I think that would be really something, you know, interesting. I'm writing that down because I'd be curious to chart that for myself and just kind of see what the difference would be. But
our number was, yeah. And, you know, back in the day, it was a lot harder to chart, you know, because we used to do everything by hand. But yeah, now... Yeah. You know, we send our stuff into Huddle. We send our stuff into our service. And so, you know, since we've had all this new technology where you can, you know, have your films, you know, statted and all those numbers done. So right now our number is 45%. So if we can rebound 45%, I think this year, if we rebounded 45% of all of our misses, I think we won every game. And if we were under 45%, then, you know, then we didn't lose every game, but that was our number. So typically, you know, if we can rebound 4.5, you know, basically 4.5 out of every 10 missed shots, mm-hmm. we're probably going to, you know, win that game, you know, because obviously if the ball's going in and we're taking a lot of 3s, you know, you're basically, you know, when you make a 3, you're winning a possession and a half, you know. So if you're playing a team that's traditionally a 2-point shooting team, you know, if I go down and make a 3, well, you can't go down. And if you make a 2, you're still going to be down a half a possession. And so, you know, so if you start counting possessions, you know, that you typically get, you know, in a game, and you're playing a team that's primarily a team that scores 2 points in free throws, mm-hmm. you know, if you make a certain number of threes and they shoot a certain percentage, there's not going to be enough possessions in the game for them to right. beat you. Does that make
right.
sense?
Yeah. No, it just comes down. It comes down to numbers, right?
And exactly. Touches, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, you can, you know, you can almost get to a certain point, you know, in the fourth quarter, and you can almost count the number of possessions that you have, that, you know, that they're going to have and you're going to have, you know, as long as, you know, you don't, you know, turn the ball, you know, they don't press you and turn the ball over and change the number of possessions. But, you know, you can almost count the number of possessions that are left in a game, you know, and almost, you know, dictate, you know, what you need to do in, you know, your six or seven possessions. You know, we score two times, you know, they're, you know, I mean, it's a it's a numbers game, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And so unusual things have to happen, you know, if you have a, you know, if you kind of know those numbers and know what you need.
Oh, no, that's a great point. You know, and once you really start to chart, you know, these things and these touches and possessions and percentages and the things, like, you see it, like, you really see so many trends and so many things that you could, you know, work off of, you know, like we talked about, you know, you look at those numbers and look what the stats bear out, and, you know, kind of make decisions from there that not just make sense from a player standpoint, but just mathematically as well. And yeah, that's awesome. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
On the topic of building a physically strong team, let's just kind of talk in general terms, coach, about what are you doing as a coach to build strength? What are you kind of looking at in terms of, like, a training regimen or the things that you're looking to dial in and get the strength where you want it to be?
Yeah. So one of the things that, you know, I'll take it a little bit of a step further before we start.
Cool.
You know, for me, from a coaching perspective, and I kind of go back to numbers again, you know, I look at okay, so I have this new program. And so I got this new program. And so for me, it's how much time do I have with these kids? And basically, how do I need to structure the time that I'm going to have? So, you know, I got down here June 1st. We have a four week summer situation that Alabama gets us, where we can compete with other schools. We can go to as many play days and team camps as we want. We can practice them, you know, and all those things. July is a little more voluntary. You know, once we get into the season, we get 2 hours a week with our team. Once a week up until we get to October, and then October we have the start of our season. So when I came down here, you know, it was like, okay, how much time do I have with these kids, and where do I need to devote that time for us to be as successful as we possibly could be? Mm-hmm. And, you know, strength and conditioning is super important to me. I mean, I teach strength and conditioning to just regular ed kids during the day. I've done it for 20 something years. I've done when I was at Spain Park, I did our boys basketball team. I did our girls, obviously the team that I coached, I did their strength and conditioning. I did our girls soccer team. I did our cheerleaders. So I've done strength and conditioning for multiple teams outside of just girls basketball. So it's something I'm super passionate about. But when I got down here, you know, like, the amount of time, you know, that you can devote to strength and conditioning, you know, has to be proportionate to what your other needs are as far as your team is concerned. And so right. for this year, you know, my strength and conditioning was probably, well, not probably, it was less because of the needs that we had for so many other things,
other
their
things,
skill, yeah. their acumen, their, you know, they didn't know, they didn't know any of the drills I was going to do. They didn't know any of the terminology I was going to use. And so, you know, so we were very, very basic, bare bones, you know, with our strength and conditioning, basic lifts, you know, big muscle groups, you know, squats and bench presses and push presses and those kind of things, and didn't really get specific into, what you see on YouTube and what you, see with all of these, basketball specific things. And that was okay for us, because we had a great year. I think the time that we spent where we needed to spend it was perfect, and that kind of stuff. But I told our kids all the way through, all of our kids that were coming back, I was like, look, I said, I know that you know what our strength and conditioning program was this year. Next year, it's going to be a way different. Just because now when I go in with this group that I have right now, they know my terminology, they know our offense, they know our defense, they know our press breaks, they know those kind of things. So all of that time that I had to devote to that, now I can structure into, trying to win, those extra little battles. And from a coaching perspective, I always look at how is my strength and conditioning, how many points a game is that going to get me? Like how many extra defensive rebounds, how many extra offensive rebounds, how many charges, how many playthrough contact and ones are we going to get through a good strength and conditioning program? And, and so I feel like, and all the programs I've started, I think that, it's not something that I could have gone in and did, 30 minutes, 3 days a week in season, like I would normally do. Mm-hmm. We couldn't afford taking that time away from the gym. But, like I said, I mean, all you have to do is turn the TV on right now, whether you're watching the women's tournament, you're watching the men's tournament. I mean, it's a bloodbath out there. I mean, those yeah, guys are, one of the girls that plays, she was all SEC, Sarah Ashley Barker, who plays at Alabama. She's, I guess what you would say their best player. She played for me at Spain Park. She was Miss Basketball Alabama. She was a two-time player of the year, 2,500 point a game scorer. She's a 6 foot, point guard that's, built like a brick, house, and can, and is playing, in the end, they got beat tonight by Texas, number one team in their region. But I mean, she was the epitome of, she was the epitome of, she was the epitome of, I mean, just being able to play through contact and do all those types of things. So
the physicality, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think we're at the point now, I think we're at the point now where, we can start to, and not that we didn't, I mean, they have the basics, but now I feel like we can start, doing some things with our post players, doing some different things with our guards, strength, conditioning, speed, agility, those types of things. And, and really start to implement, what I think is, can be a game changer. I mean, it not only does it make you better on the floor, but it also helps prevent injury. And just, I think, boost the confidence. I know when I'm a big into strength and conditioning. And I know when I, am consistent and go in the weight room and I lift and I run and I, and I'm fit and I'm strong, and I'm not even playing a sport, but I know the confidence that gives me, just walking around in my daily. And so I know, what that does for athletes, male and female, no matter what the sport they're playing.
Yeah. Did you find that in your experience that you had to do a lot of work, like selling the weight room and the importance of it? Was there a long buy-in process for your team? Cause I know I've talked to some coaches who, they'll talk about how, players, they'll go to the weight room, but maybe just kind of go for the motions or not, all too excited about doing it, kind of treating it more like a chore than anything else. Did you have any of that experience, or was the motivation and the buy-in kind of there from the beginning?
No, I think it's a great question. I think where I've found the buy-in is when, number one, you have somebody who is passionate and really, really knows what they're doing. And then number two, a lot of, you'd be amazed, there are a lot of coaches, and even when I was at Spain Park, and you know, we had a lot of coaches that really just had was a high school coach that just had to coach, you know, their one sport. They weren't assistants in a whole bunch of sports and didn't have the time to do it. They hired out, like they hired groups that would come in from outside and do their strength and the conditioning. And, you know, and to me, it, I mean, I'll lift with my kids. I mean, I run with my kids. You know, if we go out and we do sprints, if we go out and we run distance stuff, if we do whatever, I mean, I lace my shoes up and I go out and I run with them.
You're getting after it too, yeah.
And so I think it's for, I guess for me, I've never had anybody not buy into it, because I think that they see that, I mean, it's just like boxing out and playing defense. I mean, I tell them, hey, if you ain't going to box out, if you ain't going to play defense, then you ain't going to play. And so it's no different than if you ain't going to buy in the weight room, then there's no reason for you to even be out here. And it's not really a threat. It's just, they know that that's, you know, that that's an important part, you know, of what we're doing. And yeah, but I have seen it the other way. I've had, the funny thing is I've had coaches at different schools from different sports ask me if I would go and, you know, and I would do their strength and conditioning for their athletes. And there were a couple teams that I would start to do it, and the coach would be over there, and the coach would be, you know, drinking their coffee and on their phone and not paying attention and all that stuff. And then their kids were really hard for me to motivate and be passionate about the weight room, because the head coach wasn't involved. The head coach wasn't paying attention. The head coach wasn't, you know, and all that stuff. And so, you know, I mean, I just stopped doing it for a lot of coaches, you know, just because I knew they were using me as a time filler, and they really, really we're only doing it because, you know, hey, this is what everybody else is doing. If I don't do it, I'm going to get criticized and da, 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 da. And, you know, and so, you know, I think it's just, you know, if you know what you're doing and you're passionate and you make it important, you know, I think that, you know, I mean, that's my job. My job is to get these kids to buy into everything I'm doing, yeah. You know, and so,
well, I think that kind of speaks to the point of anything coaching related, right? What you're passionate about, what you're excited about, what you're all in about are going to be the things that your players are going to be all in about. So to your point, you know, being yourself, being somebody who's big into fitness, conditioning, and not just for the basketball sense, but on a personal level as well, like all of your players, I'm sure, can see that, you know, radiate off you, how important it is and how excited and how energetic you get and how amped up you get for it. And of course, all the basketball benefits you get from it as well. I mean, I'm sure there's, like you said, there's very little that you need to do to sell it at that point.
Yeah. So one of the things that I do, then everybody thinks I'm crazy about, is I run these 100-mile ultra marathons. Have you ever heard of those?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I don't do them, okay. But I know what they are. Yeah.
Okay. So I've done 6. And I haven't done one in 2 years. And so I signed up for another one. I'm running one the first weekend in November. And one of the big reasons I'm doing it, like when I was at Spain Park, my kids saw me train and they saw the things that I went through to get my body ready to go do those things. And look, I mean, people are inspired by watching people do tough things. I mean, you know, all you got to do is turn on David Goggins, you know, and watch some of his YouTube stuff. I mean, and people are inspired by, you know, what he does, you know, physically and mentally, you know, to prepare himself and to train and to push his body and, you know, and do all those things. And but my Orange Beach kids haven't ever seen me do it. They've heard me tell stories. They've seen some videos of me doing it and that kind of stuff, but they haven't actually seen it. And I really thought I was kind of done, because I'm kind of getting up there in age a little bit. I really kind of thought I was done. And I told my wife, who's my assistant coach, I said, you know what? I said, I'm going to sign up for 100 this fall. And she's like, why are you doing that again? And I was like, well, I said, number one, I said, I want to do it because I like the, you know, when you're coaching, I'm getting off on a tangent a little bit.
No, I
when
don't
you're
know.
coach, when you're coaching, like I can fulfill, you know, the competitive juices that I miss as being an athlete. But then all of that is just through somebody else. And, you know, there's nothing better than, you know, going out and having the competition and having the training and having the grind and all that stuff. And you having to actually put your own body through it. And I thought that when I got done playing and all that stuff, man, I was going to be a coach and man, this is going to keep me, you know, this, that, and the other. And then I found myself playing in men's leagues and basketball. I found myself playing in men's league flag football games, you know, and all that stuff. I found myself running marathons and half marathons and, you know, and all that stuff. And I've never been able to get over doing it.
Yeah.
So number one, that's part of it. But number two, you know, I want my kids to see me train. I want my kids, you know, to know what I'm doing. And then when I ask to push them, when it's a little bit hot or I'm asking them to go a little bit faster or go a little bit longer or whatever, like they can't look at me and say, man, that guy's sitting over there and he's got a clipboard and a cup of coffee and I wish his butt would get out here and run with us. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's kind of that no excuses mentality. You know, I remember having coaches. I remember having coaches that make me, you know, I'm not trying to disparage anybody, but, you know, they couldn't run from, you know, the refrigerator to their couch, you know, out there, you know, berating me because, you know, I let up a little bit on the 25th sprint of the day in full pads. And, you know, and I thought to myself, yeah, I wish your butt would get out here and, you know, do this. And so, you know, I mean, it's been something that I've always tried to keep myself in good shape. I've always tried to, you know, challenge myself, you know, and that kind of stuff. And I think that my kids see that. And I think it's a definite benefit, you know, for me to get them to buy into doing hard stuff when they know that I'm doing hard stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, yeah, there's like, well, I could probably get a few more reps in at this point if I know what coach is doing, or like you said, kind of push a little bit further through this drill or whatever the case is.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. Speaking of which, talk us about what are you doing on the court? You know, drills or practice habits or things that you're doing on the court that are getting your players into game shapes. How do you kind of incorporate what you're doing in your drills or in your practices that are keeping your girls in shape and getting them in better shape?
Yeah, I mean, look, the best thing that you can do as a coach is to devise a practice to where they can work on all of the skills and do all the things that you need them to do in basketball and not turn into a track practice, because we're not trying to be good at running. We're trying to be good at playing basketball. And so, you know, so I think when I first started coaching, you know, I was, we gotta do this, but, you know, I've got to save time at the end for us to, you know, to run some down and backs and, you know, run some suicides and, you know, and do all those things. And don't get me wrong, I am certainly not opposed, you know, to doing some conditioning and those kind of things. But man, can I do a full court ball handling drill? Can I do a full court layup drill? You know, can I do, you know, some sort of, you know, defensive corridor drill, you know, where they're defending a ball handler, you know, and all that stuff. Can I get all of that while working on basketball? And I think, you know, when I was younger, I really didn't know how to organize and run a practice, you know, and then as I got better at it and I got to be around more coaches and I got to listen to more things, you know, I think it's really just about, you know, organization. You know, I really never try to teach longer than 8 to 10 minutes, you know, so my way of kind of conducting a practice plan is, you know, early in the season, you're gonna have to teach a lot. You know, you're gonna have to anything new you're putting in, you gotta kind of revamp stuff that, you know, and get their mind right if we haven't run some of our stuff or, you know, or whatever. But I know my kids can only listen to me coach and kind of work through things for about 8 to 10 minutes at the max. And so what I'm always trying to do is trying to do something almost like interval training. So it's like, you know, we're going to do something full court. You know, we're going to do a shooting drill, you know, something half court, you know, maybe a finishing or a, you know, a 3-point shooting drill. And then I'm going to teach something. Okay. Hey, we're going to do a 10-minute blob session. So we're going to review three underneath the basket inbounds plays where most of the time, you know, they're going to hear me talk about, you know, hey, if we get this defense, we're going to get this, blah, blah, blah. All right. Then I'm not going to go, then my next 8 or 10 minute segment isn't going to be me teaching, you know, our entry into our European ball screen stuff because they've just sat there and kind of toned it down. And we talk about, hey, this is going to be a physical time. Hey, I really need you to put your thinking caps on. I really need you to focus in on what I'm teaching you, you know. But then their brains are going to shut off. So now, man, I got to get them running again. So now we get up and down the floor, we do something full court, then we do something at half court, and then I go into teaching. And so I just kind of try to mix it up. You know, I try to stay on schedule. You know, we set the timer, I have somebody running the clock. You know, we try to keep everything on schedule. You know, just like every coach, sometimes you get a little bit, you know, where you go a little bit long, you'd be like, hey, stop the clock, or hey, give me 3 more minutes or whatever. And and every time I do that, I always get mad at myself because probably if they didn't get it in 8 to 10 minutes, they probably weren't going to get it if I went
Right.
13 or
Yeah.
14. And
I've
then I
been
was
there.
and then I was cutting something out at the end that I'm pissed that I'm going to have to go back and do tomorrow. And so I think if you have a great preseason conditioning program, you know, your August to October 14th or whenever we go, and they're never going to be in, you know, basketball shape and your conditioning shape is never the same. You know, and so then when they get on the court, you know, there's obviously going to be that time. So again, we try to keep them moving, you know, keep them shooting. And then teach them, get them moving, get them shooting or get them doing something, and then teaching. And we kind of try to stay with that model, and it's worked pretty good for us.
Yeah, I will attest to having been in that position, coach, where I overspeak or overexplain and try and force it into their head or try to, you know, use up all this practice time to get this one thing right or this one thing down. And next thing you know, I've wasted half my practice and we still didn't get it done right. Now I feel behind. So
Right.
unfortunately, I can kind of co-sign that one. But to your point, just kind of keep things going and keep things moving because I know even in my experience too that if we get stuck on one thing for too long, like everything just gets really sluggish. And then I kind of like that idea of, you know, you gotta, you know, do something, keep moving, keep them in transition to something else and make it lively. Otherwise, it can become a bit of a drag in my experience as well. So no, I completely
Yeah.
agree. So what are you running on offense and defense, and what would you say is the level of conditioning that is required in order to execute your offense and defense the way that you want it?
Okay, so we run the European ball screen, the side ball screen stuff, Gonzaga, we call it Euro, and then you know that's our base continuity, and then we have some horn stuff that I've run for a while, some pick and pop stuff, some high-low stuff, some ISO stuff, you know, that we run out of horn, some dribble handoff weave stuff. And then defensively, I'm a straight man guy. You know, we'll I'm I guess defensively, I'm a little bit more like it's funny, one of the guy who's Chris Latch, who's our the boys coach at Spain Park High School, who I think is just one of the great coaches that I've ever worked with. He's, I guess, what would be who you would call, and I'm talking defensively, more of a system guy. A system is, you know, my defense is going to beat their offense. And I'm more of like the Bill Belichick of, I'm going to try to, you know, I'm not worried about what you're running. I'm worried about who your best players are and who's trying to score. So I'm not worried about defeating the play. I'm more worried about taking away the person, you know, or the people that are trying to run that play. So I guess I got it from that football mentality. When I first started coaching, I was coaching football. And this was back when everybody was running the wishbone, you know. And so you'd come out, you had the dive, you had the quarterback, and you had the pitch guy. And so, you know, the inside linebacker had the dive guy, you know, the outside linebacker had the quarterback, and your corner had to come up and take the pitch man. And I just remember we were playing a team, this was up in Ohio, and the quarterback, his name was Joe Roebuck, and he was drafted by the Yankees out of high school. So the guy was, you know, 6'2", 215-pound quarterback who could run like a deer, you know, and all this stuff. And I just remember the football coach, you know, our defensive coordinator, who was like, he's like, okay, hey, we're going to run this 4-4, and we got this guy on the pitch man, we got this guy on the quarterback, we got this guy, we're sound. And I'm like, Coach Werblow, I'm like, we're not sound. He's like, we got one guy for everybody. I'm like, but our guy who's going to tackle Joe Roebuck, he can't tackle him, but we're not sound.
And
you know, and so I've watched coaches, you know, sit there, and it's like, you know, we're going to play this, you know, hey, we're going to play drop coverage in the screen and roll game, or we're going to do this, or we're going to switch this, or we're not going to switch this. We're going to do whatever. And they go by their defensive rules, but their defensive rules can't sometimes account for, you know, a great player or, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
and so, So mine is, you know, when somebody asks me, you know, what are you doing? What's your ball screen coverage? I'm like, well, who are we playing? You know, well, what's the matter? You know, you go over, you go under, you ice it, you know, you double it, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, well, it depends on who we're playing. Like if, you know, if the point guard comes off and they're dynamic and they can shoot the three off the dribble and they can get downhill, you know, well, we're going to play it this way. And if they've got a point guard who can't shoot off the dribble or isn't trying to attack, we're going to play it that way. And so I think our defense is, we do have rules. I mean, and we have, you know, things that, you know, that we do. I think I'm a little more like a Tom Izzo. We don't force baseline. We don't force middle. You know, he just kind of squares up, you know, and we're going to stay in front. And that's kind of how, you know, how we play defense. I'm not a big, you know, hey, we're going to force them to somebody and we're going to come over and take a charge and, you know, and do all that. I think that takes away from the accountability of the person guarding the ball. And, you know, and I want that person, if I line up and I got to guard that person, I want that person to stay in front no matter where they go. And so we're pretty much head up. Let's play. You know, we'll help when we need to help. We'll stretch when we need to stretch. You know, it's basically going to be determined by the team that we play. So,
yeah. And, you know, with that, I imagine there has to be a lot of, you know, the fitness and the stamina and everything that we just kind of talked about, because you never kind of know, you know, game to game, you know, what sort of little adjustments you might need to make, right, in terms of the way you're going to play someone, or the way that you're going to, you know, have to be maybe a little bit more aggressive, less aggressive, the way that you talked about the screens and then the adjustments that you make, like that idea of kind of having to be ready for, you know, to adjust or be able to, you know, play any sort of style, I think really lends the idea of making sure that you're intentionally practicing to be in shape, hitting the weight room, because who knows what of each of those skill sets are going to be required, you know, in that particular game or that particular instance. You kind of have to be working on everything on a physical standpoint.
Ain't no doubt. No doubt. I mean, I think, and I'm not trying to disparage playing zone, because I've played zone before and I know coaches that play really good zones and, you know, and that kind of stuff. But I do think that, you know, sitting down and guarding somebody in man-to-man, you know, and we don't press. That was just, like I said, it was too much for us. you know, to come in and say, okay, hey, these guys don't know how to do anything. And you know, I tried to tell them, and I'm not trying to, again, disparage the guy who were before me, but I mean, they didn't run anything last year. They ran one play. They ran one inbounds play. It was very unorganized, very disorganized. They didn't know how to break a press. They didn't know how to do anything. And, you know, and so not only were they having to learn, you know, all the stuff, you know, I tried to tell them, I'm like, I said, look, I said, your old coach was teaching you, we'll use languages. Your old coach was teaching you English 101. And that's what he taught you all year. I said, now I'm going to come in and I'm going to teach you Spanish, if we're talking in basketball terms. I said, but I'm not going to teach, I can't teach you Spanish 101. I said, we got to go to Spanish 401. And so, you know, so with that, it was, would I have liked to have been able to press? Yes. Did we have the time? You know, because they couldn't break a press to save their life. So the first thing that I did when I came in was I had to teach them how to break a press. And I mean, I remember, you know, we started playing games in June, and I remember parents coming up to me and going, you know, we got beat. And I remember parents coming up to me and going, oh my gosh, coach, thank you, thank you, thank you. And I'm like, thank you for what? We just got beat 20 in a running clock summer league game. And they're like, no, we broke the press four times. I said, yeah. I said, but, you know, we got it stolen 12. And they're like, no, you don't understand, coach. They're like, we didn't break the press one time last year. We broke it four times. We actually threw the ball in the middle, and that person pivoted and threw the ball to the girl on the backside. We've never seen our girls do that. And I was like, so yeah. So, I mean, we got to the point to where, you know, we had to break everything down, how to jump stop, how to pass fake, you know, how to pivot, you know, and do all those things. But like I said, you know, then it's, okay, what am I not going to be able to do? Would I have loved to have a little bit of a press? Would I have had a press game? There just wasn't time in the season with what I had with these kids, you know, to be able to do it. So I guess to go back to your point, you know, I mean, if we would have done that, then that would have, you know, required, you know, more conditioning, you know, and those kind of things. And we weren't ready for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it speaks to where your team was at, and, you know, not throwing everything at them if they're not ready for that. They, you know, they have Spanish 401, but the AP Spanish might be that.
Yeah.
Have, right.
Yeah. No doubt. No doubt.
Yeah. No, that's great. Talk about what you do to kind of keep the strength and conditioning going during a long season. How do you kind of balance making sure that you obviously are working on your basketball skills and game planning and the coaching of basketball throughout the season and your practices, but also how are you making sure that, you know, that physical fitness is being maintained and that your players are ready for that long grind of a season?
Yeah, so I'll take you through what my program will be, probably not even next year, but maybe the year after. Mm-hmm. So when I was at Spain Park and we were, you know, going down the state tournament, winning state championships and all those kind of things, basically what we would do is we kind of broke our season up into four seasons. So we had our summer season, we had our fall. So our summer season would be basically the Tuesday after Memorial Day, and we would have a 4-week time period in there. And we would practice every day, and we would lift 4 days a week. And, you know, usually Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, usually somewhere between the 35 to 45 minute range. And then, you know, and then in July, we had a lot of kids that would play AAU. And so we would have 3 days a week, usually Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Those would be the days that most of the kids would be in town if they weren't gone for the week. And we would do skill work, and we would do a little bit lighter, more of a maintenance type strength training stuff. They would have a couple weeks off before they would come back in the middle of August. And then from August to October, we would hammer it. I mean, we would be in there 4 days a week. We would be going heavy, usually 4 weeks with a test day after 4 weeks, and then kind of a recovery 2 or 3 days before we'd start our next four weeks. And we would go super heavy. We'd be in the weight room. We would be on the track. We would be doing plyo boxes. We would be doing speed ladders. We would be doing, I mean, anything and everything that you could do, we would do that. When we would get to the season, basically we would start in October, and we would go from October to Christmas. And from October to Christmas, we would lift 3 days a week. Now, we would try to find, you know, usually we practiced 6 days a week. So we practiced Sunday through Friday. Our games were in the middle of the week. We rarely played on Saturday unless it was a tournament or something. And so we would normally lift like Sunday, Monday, Wednesday were usually 3 days that we didn't have games. We'd try not to lift on a game day if we couldn't. And if we had a game on a Monday, we would just move it around. When we got to Christmas, then we would go from Christmas until the end of the season. And even when we went to played in the state championship that week, we went in the weight room. So we would lift 2 days a week then. So when we got into January and February, we would go 2 days a week, lighter weight, more reps. We would probably only spend about 20 to 25 minutes in the weight room, not a whole lot of lifts, just trying to maintain what we've built up in the fall and through the first part of the year. And then when the season got over, usually we would end the first week of the last week of February if we went to the state tournament. I would give them off until probably around spring break, which would be about a 4 to 5 week period. And then we would start lifting back usually right around the 1st of April. And we'd get back into heavy lifting that would take us April into our June period. And that was pretty much how it worked. So we would be in the weight room, you know, pretty much year round, with the exception of, you know, a couple weeks in August and a couple weeks after we got done with the season. But I will tell you, I've had kids that have gone on to, I got a girl that's obviously playing in Alabama right now. I had a girl that just graduated, played at Richmond, and a couple other Division I's that had just played recently. Most of the kids, when they've gone into, even when they've gone to Alabama, they were like, "Coach," they were like, "I'm the strongest one here." Like, awesome. I'm like, you know, these freshmen are coming in and, you know, they don't know and da 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 da. And I'm lifting with a junior or senior and, you know, and I'm doing, you know, everything they're doing and more and that kind of stuff. So, you know, so that tells me that what we're doing is, and look, I go down, you know, when I go down to, like when I go and visit colleges, like I know the Currys at Alabama, I've known them for forever. And you know, I'll go down and spend a day with them, and I won't even go. Like I've gone down and said, I don't even want to come on a day that you're practicing. I want to come a day where you're doing your strength and conditioning, and I'll go down and just watch what they do and see what they're doing to see if I'm doing is what we're supposed to be doing. And if I can steal something and incorporate it into my program. So
it's incredible. The amount of, you know, coaches I talk to at the collegiate level who talk about how, you know, they get players who come in who just, you know, physically aren't ready for whether it's the speed of the game or the strength of the game. So to be able to, you know, help give your players that sort of advantage, I imagine they, like you just mentioned, right, or just sort of must feel leagues ahead knowing that they have, you know, a regimen and a routine and, you know, something that they're going to be using in college. They already have, you know, a really great foundation for by the time they get there.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Coach, I wanted to ask you really quickly about what you think you do, or what do you think a coach can do in order to make sure that their players are not, overexerting, overworking, leading to all of the injuries that, are commonplace and that we see a lot, whether it's, the ankles or knees or just that wear and tear. What do you kind of make sure that you're working on with your players so that they're going hard physically, but they're also making sure that they're taking care of themselves and kind of maintaining injury freeness as best they can?
Yeah, I mean that's
Or easier
that's
said than done, I know.
it, very 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 much easier said than done. I mean, every kid is different, and we try to talk to them about, nutrition, and we try to talk to them about getting sleep. We try to talk to them about, most schools, when I first started coaching, I mean, I was the athletic trainer. I mean, when I first started coaching 30 years ago, I remember, I got my first job, and I remember I was coaching varsity football, and the coach came over and said, "Hey, you're gonna do running backs, you're gonna do DBs, and you're gonna tape ankles." And I'm like, "What?" And he gave me a Kramer book. It was like a big textbook, and he said, "Here's a textbook on how to tape." And so when any of our athletes come to you, you got to tape them. And that was what, training was back in those days. Well, now schools, we have, three trainers at our school. I mean, they have ultrasound and STEM, and we're about to build a $46 million athletic facility. And in our field, our training, our field house, we're actually going to have the walk-in hot and cold tubs like you see at like Alabama and all those, like state-of-the-art, like walk-in, can put multiple athletes in a cold tub, put mul not the old steel drum where you had to load the ice in and all that stuff we're talking about. And so a lot of it is, if I can make them strong and I can condition them, and then keep them, with our trainers. We fortunately for us, we had no major injuries. My daughter, who graduated 2 years ago from me, I mean, she tore her ACL her junior year. She was probably one of the fittest and most conditioned, and flexible and all of those things. And, she was chasing down a fast break and planted, and the girl cut back on her, and she tore ACL. So I mean, I mean, if it can happen to my own daughter, then it can happen to anybody. I just think it's part, of the game, unfortunately. And and like I said, we try to, get them to, take care of their bodies as best as they possibly can, and try to put them in every movement pattern that they could possibly be in to try to, build up what we can build up. And, that's the best that we can do.
Yeah, it's tough with the amount of I was talking to my athletic trainer a few weeks ago and just talking about all the stuff that we try to do in terms of prevention and being conscientious. But she was talking to me and she's like, but yeah, she's like, at the end of the day, there's just so much in basketball, cutting, pivoting, turning, jumping, landing, that percentages bear out, unfortunately, that something will probably go wrong. But like you said, the best we can do is just hope that we're training the right way and doing all those things, and hopefully keep those injuries as limited as possible. Fingers crossed,
Right,
right? Awesome.
absolutely.
Coach, wow, that time definitely flew by. That was
Okay.
great. To wrap up, Coach, there's a couple questions I ask every guest. I'll go ahead and start with this first one, which is thinking back on your coaching career. And I know you've had a long, illustrious career, but thinking back on your coaching career, what is a moment from your coaching career that you experienced and went through that you think by sharing, our listeners would be able to learn from?
That's a great question. I would say that, probably, I don't know if there's one instance, but, I would say that, I mean, just to, I guess, check your ego at the door. I think that, you know, there's so many people, and I've coached AAU and I've coached at all different levels and rec and high school and all of those types of things. And I think one of the things that I've always tried to do is try to realize that, man, there's so many people out here who know so much about this game. And, you know, I've always tried to make myself to the point to where, you know, I'm always trying to learn, you know, always trying to watch clinics, watch things, listen to podcasts, you know, listen to different people. My way is not the highway. You know, and even learn from players, coaching different players and learn, you know, and all those types of things. So, I just think that, you know, I didn't invent the game, and nobody has invented the game. And I think that, you know, just trying to be a student of the game, is probably the best advice that I could give for a young coach, or somebody that's just getting into the business is, man, just absorb as much as you can and then coach to your identity.
And man, there's so much out there now, isn't there?
Oh, there is. So no, it's overload. It's overload.
Yeah, it could be overwhelming.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Coach, to wrap up, I give every guest what I call a 60-second soapbox, but you can go over 60 seconds. I'm not going to time you, but it's your platform to get out kind of a final message, a closing idea, a closing thought, something to leave the listeners with. You're welcome to take it any direction that you want. I just want to open up the floor to you, Coach, and let you go ahead and get on your soapbox and share what you want. So go ahead, Coach. You can take it from here.
Well, I'll be quick because we could do a whole podcast on this. I guess the thing that I'm frustrated with from being a high school coach, especially in the game of basketball, is kind of where the exploitation of AAU and all of the that has taken it. You know, I just got done coaching on the Under Armour circuit and with my daughter's team, and we had a bunch of kids that have gone on to play in Division I, and we had a really good team and we had a great experience, you know. But, you know, to travel, you know, to Spooky Nook, Pennsylvania, and then have to go to Boo Williams up in Virginia and have to go to Dallas and, you know, and stay in hotels and parents having to pay $100 a ticket for a weekend to go, you know, watch your kid play a game and that kind of stuff. It's super frustrating. And the problem is that, you know, colleges don't recruit out of the high schools. They recruit out of AAU. So, you know, it's a necessary evil. You know, if you have kids that want to go and try to play collegiately and those kind of things, it's just really frustrating. You know, the amount of money that has come into the game of basketball. And, you know, and I think it's really, you know, deterred the growth of the game, you know, because I think people are trying to make too much money off these high school kids. And that's a frustrating point for me.
Yeah, there's a lot of elements, unfortunately, that feel very exploitive, don't they? Very, very, wrong reasons. Yeah,
right.
And I don't have as much experience as you and others do at the AAU and the club level, but just some of the things that I hear with things that are going on, it's kind of mind-boggling. It's kind of crazy. Hopefully we can make some adjustments and changes and, you know, get this game back to the kids where it belongs and not
absolutely
in some of these other elements, right?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Coach, I really appreciate you being able to come on and share a lot of insights about, you know, your physical strength and program running and even your physical fitness journey as well. This is great. Like I said, it's coming out on a great time here in the off season for I know me and our listeners to really kind of reflect on what we're doing in the weight room and what we're doing to get our teams ready physically for this next year coming up. So best of luck as you continue doing great things at Orange Beach and keep on going with the momentum that you've already built there, Coach. Really appreciate you coming on, spending some time talking to us.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for listening. This was another edition of the Basketball Teacher Podcast. We will see you guys next time.
Thank you for listening to another edition of the Basketball Teacher Podcast. Make sure to connect with us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, or reach us directly through email at basketballteacherpodcast@gmail.com. Take care, be safe, and we'll see you next time.